Yes, land lovers, this here be the Once Upon a Time fan podcast. This be an unofficial podcast dedicated to the hit ABC TV show Once Upon a Time. Now this here be the main show episode, where we give our further thoughts of the amazing Once Upon a Time episode we watched last Sunday. Now, if you called in or emailed in, you might be hearing your thoughts in the podcast. So keep a ruddy eye out for it. And now, let's take a closer look at all the Once Upon a Time treasure we found. Here is Captain and First Mate of the Once Upon a Time podcast. And now, Captain, permission to come aboard?
Permission granted. Come aboard to the main show of the Once Upon a Time fan podcast.
Yep.
My name is Jeff Roney, and you must be...
Colleen Roney.
Excellent.
So First we, mate.
Yes, my only mate.
Well, so I hope so.
We are sailing for more treasure that we found from Once Upon a Time.
Mm-hmm.
And we have some emails and some voicemails and a surprise or two along the way.
Yes.
So, first of all, thank you for joining us. For the new people, thanks. Older folks that's been along with us a while, thanks as well. The first thing I want to do is get used to playing these bumpers. So I'm going to do this first.
Hi, Captain. Do we have some kind of news for Once Upon a Time this week?
Yes, indeed. We do have some news. And some news from over the summertime. So we'll get caught up. Some of it's old, but like I said, we'll get caught up. So the first thing let's talk about is the ratings of The Heart of the Truest Believer. So it's hard to get all the information together, but this is, from what I understand, the most recent numbers from last Sunday, including that's live plus, I would imagine, DVR, possibly Hulu, and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
10.3 million viewers.
That's great.
And that jumped up from 8 point whatever, which was kind of the running number that was out about Tuesday.
Okay.
So but we've added, two million-ish viewers.
Yeah.
So that's cool. Now, I did a little research, and I don't know if this is Live Plus. They call it Live Plus 3 or something.
Okay.
It's an updated number. But the season 2 premiere, Broken, was 11.36 million viewers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the season 1 pilot was 12.93.
Right. Now, let's be fair, too. Season 3 went up against Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, I mean, people may not have recorded it, may not have, you know, watched it yet. May not, who knows?
Right.
And may have not realized it was back on again. You know, people who are maybe not quite as big of fans, you know, they like the show, but they're not, you know, concerned with when it's on.
My opinion, I don't want to go off on a huge tangent. My opinion is they should wait to publish the numbers until probably Saturday after for that very reason
right there.
TV viewing is changing. It's not the way it used to be. Nielsen ratings, as far as live viewership, isn't the only game in town.
No.
I did a quick poll on Twitter. I said, how do you watch Once Upon a Time? And, you know, some people say live if I can.
Right.
DVR. Some people are ABC web, ABC website.
.com, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Also, Hulu Plus was another.
Right.
So there's a lot of different places, except for the live television.
You mean aside from the live?
Aside from the live that people are watching Once Upon a Time.
Yeah.
You know, and some people out of the country, not naming names, but they are going to these free streaming sites. We would never tell anyone to go there.
Right.
But they're telling me that's where they're going to go view it before it reaches their country.
Right.
So they can keep up and all this kind of stuff. So, like I said, it's a whole new game, and I think they really need to revamp this to kind of incorporate that. And I think we should all wait Right. Well, people get worried.
People do get worried, but you know, yeah. I honestly think that you know it's really tough to determine, like you said, because there are so many sources, and unless you're going to capture all of them, and unless you're going to take factors into consideration, you know, you have to look at that. So anyway, and then not to beat a dead horse or anything, but you know, some people were a little disappointed with season two.
Right.
So some people may have decided they don't want to watch it anymore. And once they hear how great it's starting off, I think they might come back. So just, you know, that's all I'm saying is it's a possibility that we have some folks who, you know, weren't jumping on the, you know, jumping up and down eager to watch it. And I hope that once they realize that it's actually starting off on a really great foot, they should come and watch it.
Yep. I agree. And I think a lot of people, not all, I agree with what you're saying, but I think some people that were jaded actually did watch the first episode of the premiere of season three and said, wow, okay, whole new world, whole new opportunities, whole new season.
Whole new slate.
So let's, let me try it out again. Let's,
and hopefully, and I'm sure there are some of those as well. I'm just saying, I think there might be even, you know, a small number of folks who maybe haven't, and they're going to get caught up and they'll realize how great it is. So,
all right. So big news, big news. We obviously we recorded after that, but we want to wish Melanie a happy birthday.
There were a lot of birthdays over the summer from our listenership,
right,
by the way.
Right, but this is pretty recent.
Right, that's what I'm saying. That's the most recent one.
Yeah.
But there were a number of birthdays that happened over the summer between...
So we want to wish Melini and all those people that we missed over the summer.
Not to detract from Melini's, just, you know, want to make sure we recognize
Melini.
That...
Happy birthday, Melini.
Woo! Yay, for the most recent.
Yay! And then we'll wait. And then happy birthday to everyone else that we missed.
Yeah, and I can only think of a couple things off the top of my head, and even that I'm like I'd have to go back and look at my calendar to make sure. But anyway,
all right, now on to more news over the summer. We want to send big love and congratulations to Lana Parrilla.
Yes,
for her engagement to Fred, I believe.
Yes, Fred de Blasio. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm so bad with names. So anyway, congrats to Lana. She's the nicest evil queen I know.
Yeah.
She is very nice.
She is.
She waved at us in a...
She's very sweet.
Misty, rainy crowd late at night Moncton Street in Steveston.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Also, J-Mo starred in a movie called Some Girls.
Okay. Cool.
Does that name of the movie ring any bells with you?
No, it doesn't actually.
That was a Rolling Stones album name.
Oh, okay.
Some Girls.
Well, you're
actually a song, too.
Probably.
Yep. Yep. All right. Anyway, Some Girls is now available on Vimeo and iTunes. And if you want more information on that, it's at somegirlsfilm.com. And we'll have all the links and information in the show notes for you to check out.
Be great.
Ginny Goodwin starred in a National Geographic Channel movie called Killing Kennedy, in which she played Jackie Kennedy. And she looked strikingly, almost exactly like her.
Yeah.
It was really
incredible. She's a good choice for that.
I mean, she's beautiful,
like
first of all. But second of all, she really did look very much like Jacqueline Kennedy. So, the film premieres coming up pretty quick on Sunday, November 10th. And we'll have a link with more information on that as well.
Great.
So there's a number of illustrated novels and behind-the-scenes magazines about Once Upon a Time. The one Behind the Magic was just released not too long ago, the 1st of October. And so if you'd like any of those, please use our Amazon link. We don't charge for this website. We don't, I mean, if you want to donate, that's fine, but we don't ask for it. The only thing we really ask is that you please use our Amazon store link.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully everybody does shopping at Amazon. And if you do, we'd ask that you use store.onceuponatimepodcast.com. Mm-hmm. If you use that link, you go on Amazon, you buy whatever you want to buy, and we get a percentage, and it helps us with the show. And lady, we bought puppy stairs with the percentage as it added up. So we thank you for that. That's all we ask.
Right.
That's all we ask. All right. I got a lot of sounds.
That's great.
So that's another one.
It's very Tinkerbellish.
So let's jump. Yes. So let's jump into our thoughts that we kind of jotted down when we rewatched the episode. So you've got a list there. Do you want to start and then I'll do the...
Whatever.
Okay. Well, go ahead and start.
Okay. Well, so I guess the question, one of the first questions we had was, how did Pan or the Lost Boys, however, communicate with Greg and Tamara? I mean, how'd they even know to find them in the first place? That's my whole thing is.
Yep.
How did they pick them? What made them, you know, the ideal choice? There had to be a way, some way, right?
Right.
So that opens up a whole Pandora's box of, so if they picked them, they figured out who they were, picked them, how'd they even communicate with them? And how did they deliver that communicator with them? And you have a question here. How'd they know to light a signal fire? That was not... That was Tamara saying, look, the communicator's damaged, so we'll just light a signal fire because then they'll know we're here because who else would be lighting a signal fire? So that answers that question. But the more important question is really, how did they know to pick Greg and Tamara? Specifically, you know, how did they end up putting them together? Mm-hmm. How did Greg and Tamara meet?
Right.
Did they know each other before they got communicated with by the Pan and the Lost Boys?
The only answer I have is just a kind of a guess, is that they had an inside man or woman that kind of nudged them together somehow.
Possibly, or it could have been a, you know, similar to how Tamara manipulated the meeting with Bay or Neil.
Right. And yeah.
So, but then the question I have is, okay, so is it possible that the shadow communicated? Because that's how Peter ended up here anyway.
Right. That's a good point.
If you look at Peter Pan, he followed his shadow here. His shadow detached, and he followed it here to London. And that's how he met the Darling children. So I'm wondering if that's the case here, is that he followed the shadow, showed up here, or is Wendy still involved? Like we haven't seen anything beyond Wendy other than the last season, you know, when we talked about that. So is Wendy somehow involved?
Wendy could be involved. You know, maybe the home office of Neverland was kind of a ruse for the actual real home office. Maybe the shadow brought notes and left it there like a mysterious whatever. And a note could be meet me at whatever. And then he was working with both Greg and Tamara to kind of bring them together. I don't know. But
yeah, it's a real interesting. And we don't know when they met.
That is the only personage, spirits, whatever that was, the shadow, to go from Neverland to England, possibly
and
U.S.
Because we just don't know.
Right. No, that's great. It's a great point.
So.
So how did Greg and Tamara know where Neverland was? And, you know, because according to Neil, if you thought of a place when you went through a portal, that's where you went. And have they been there before? Tamara seemed shocked that it worked. I don't know. So,
interestingly enough, do you remember back in season 2?
Okay.
Right. Season 1, season 2. Gosh, it's all blending now for me. How sad. But I'm specifically referring to when Regina got Jefferson to use the hat to get the apple.
Yep.
She didn't go into the portal because, remember, the magic was limited there in Storybrooke. It hadn't come yet. So when she went and got the apple,
Right.
She thought of where the apple was.
Yes.
So the hat was the exception, I think, to the portal rule, because the hat had many portals inside of it. You just had to go inside the hat in the portal room,
right,
to get to the different lands. That's, I think, the exception, because the beans have always been think of a place. So what's interesting is, where did Bay, how did Bay end up where he ended up if he, you know, when Rumpel opened the vortex and let him slip through?
Right.
What was Bay thinking about, You know what I mean? Theoretically, if he was thinking about his dad, you'd think he would end up at home.
Right.
So how did he end up where he did if you think of a place? And if you don't think of a place, what happens then?
Now, okay, crazy thought. Let's think to the portal that Regina and Snow opened for the Wraith.
Yeah.
Do you remember what happened? Is the Wraith grabbed
them, right?
Emma, and pulled her in,
right?
So maybe the shadow
and Snowfall
grabbed Bay,
possibly,
and pulled him to where he wanted him to. I don't know,
and that's a possibility. That's a very real possibility.
I'm all about connections. That's really something I'm good at. I'm lousy at predictions most of the time, but I just
no. That's a great
thought.
If it
worked in one, it might work in another. So,
sure, yeah, sure, and that's a possibility because you're right. I mean, if things like wraiths and shadows. I mean, is a shadow a relative of a wraith kind of a thing? Is that really, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because remember, the wraith was trying to grab people's souls, right?
True.
So, and the shadow's seemingly doing the same thing, but we don't know because it's still not answered for us yet, I don't think. So,
no, that's a very good point because it is dark and, you know, does have something in mind, you know, to take from you, soul or shadow. I think we should kind of set that up on a shelf somewhere.
Yeah.
That's good, but it's going to be interesting to watch.
It'll be interesting to see where they take us with that. So
the one thing that I kind of noticed, apart from the actions of the people fighting made the storm grow stronger,
mm-hmm.
is that the Charming family seems to be pulling apart. You know, and it's not just the comment from Emma to Snow and Charming, but that it's just, I think time has gone by enough, and now Emma finally is going to just start talking. Because, I mean, even in the season 2 premiere, she just said, look, this is just happening too fast. I mean, da 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 da. And Emma's really having one of those, you know, honest talks. Say, look, man, we're the same age. You've had life experience. I've had life experiences too. It doesn't make you better than me, you know. And it's almost like a, you know, pretty defiant teenager, you know, saying you don't know any more than I do.
Well,
I think I know more than you,
right
or wrong.
Part of that is I think she forgets that while they are chronologically the same age, they really aren't, because they haven't physically aged. But they've had a lot of experiences as far as, you know, them being in Storybrook for that entire time. But before we kind of continue that, I want to go back to a question that we'd kind of raised that we skipped over, was that Tamara was surprised that they made it through to the portal.
Yep.
And the whole thing of it comes back to how do they communicate. So, and the question I think you came up with was, you know, the assumption is they've never made any trip through a portal. So how do they know about portal travel? My assumption would be that whatever communication they had would have been included that whole thing. And maybe Tamara saw something like that, or maybe she, I don't know, but point is, Tamara, whatever her name is, but anyway, I would assume that they were given specific instructions. It's funny because even Henry said you didn't think to ask questions, and they didn't, apparently. And so maybe they were given specific instructions and they just blindly followed it. I mean, that's kind of when you have somebody who has, again, like Greg said, you know, when you've got somebody who believes in their cause strongly enough, they'll blindly follow it. And we've had a number of examples of that in the, you know, in history, you know, in our past history. You know, I'm thinking like Jonestown, I'm thinking Waco, I'm thinking a bunch of, you know, folks like that. Mm-hmm. The ones in San Diego that...
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a number of reasons why they would have, I think, how they would have known. And again, they just blindly followed whatever instructions they were given. So,
Okay. I'm trying to move forward, but I'm trying to kind of add to what you were saying,
well,
too.
Go ahead and add to
probably
it.
The reason why Greg really latched on to it is because they probably used his father as a bargaining chip and said, mm-hmm. Do you really, did your father die in vain? Do you really want to vindicate him? this is the way. Then you need to just, and they used what they knew would be the greatest emotional charged thing in Greg's life is his father. And Tamara's life, we don't know.
We assume it's the grandmother, so though.
Okay. So
we're thinking it's the grandmother. At least I'm thinking.
Right.
So they would have had to have had some, you know, some information on her grandmother to have persuaded her to you know, join the cause, so to speak.
So Tamara seems to be dead. Dead.
Right.
But we may see a flashback on to kind of fill in more of the story.
Right.
And
or again, they may just decide not to and just talk about it and figure it out. And,
right.
You know, because Peter could easily, but then Peter's a liar, so.
Right. The interesting thing is Nat was talking about maybe the shadow going back into Greg, reviving him. And then that's a possibility. We kind of talked about that.
Yeah, we talked about
that. Parts go in and kind of revive or reconnect people.
Yeah.
And so that's still kind of on that. We don't know about this shadow ripping thing.
Yeah, we don't fully understand
so,
that.
So that's
well, wait,
that's,
though. Actually, no. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt that. But what I do want to point this out. Think about the Wraith.
Right.
The Wraith, if it grabbed your soul, remember Aurora told Mulan there was a way to reconnect your soul with your body.
Okay.
So Philip got reconnected, right?
Yep.
Because he's with them now.
So again, and I know we're kind of all over the place, but we are kind of putting things together, I promise you.
Rabbit trails are you know,
but,
thing, and
but
that's
we
okay because they all
in
connect.
In a good direction.
Right, they all connect.
So with Lost, hold on, people. With Lost, they split up the main group. And one part of a group learned something important that the other group needed to know, but they couldn't instantly tell them.
Right.
Or they could decide not to tell them based on what the information was. So somehow, if Aurora can connect with the folks on Neverland, she could tell them how to do that based on her knowledge.
Right.
And so that's what makes this show interesting, is that these little pockets of people will learn some type of thing to help another group, and they have to get there or relay a message to help them.
Right.
Okay? Kind of like the fire room and all this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, good.
So,
perfect.
Anyway,
excellent.
I kind of wanted to touch on that because I think that was really important to kind of bring up, and it did actually open some little, you know, extra rabbit trails that were good to follow down. So,
yep.
Anyway.
So the Charming family seems to be pulling apart because Emma really is kind of coming to grips with her feelings and letting them know.
Mm-hmm.
But the Dastardly characters, I think, are coming together, working together more easily instead of before.
Except Rumple. Rumple's kind of doing his own thing right now, which is kind of...
Right.
It's Rumple. It's very Rumple.
Yep.
You know, he doesn't rely on anybody. He's very self-sufficient. And again, you know, coming back to why he is the way he is and who he is, he was cowardly. And then he got the power and he became the Dark One and he basically did things on his own. But we talked about this last season a little bit. Him kind of doing things on his own and not asking for any help is another form of his cowardice. Mm-hmm. Is that he's afraid of, you know, failing or, you know, what have you. He's got nothing to lose right now because his son is dead, as far as he's aware. His son is dead. He has nothing to lose. And he has no reason to trust or, you know, want to work with these folks who have tried to, you know, hurt him in some way. And in some possible way, he may blame Regina and or Emma for what happened to Neil. And he hasn't said anything. And then he's concerned that Henry's going to be his downfall. And, you know, I'm just going to say this too, by the way. It's almost too obvious where we said last season that, the prediction was the seer told him that, you know, a boy would be his undoing. And we all kind of went, oh, some people said, oh, it's Henry. And he thinks it's Henry. But then I said it was Pinocchio. Now, and the obvious choice would be Peter Pan. But it may not even be any of those.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see how things spin around for that. I'm very curious now to see what will happen. But anyway, the whole Dastardly and characters, you know, the villains are kind of banding together a little bit, but they're not, I see them actually helping out the Charmings
Yeah.
Because Hook tried really hard after Emma went overboard. Hook tried really hard to help, you know, make sure that they could get her back, and he was very concerned about her. And you know, part of that is that he, you know, I think he cares for her.
Right. All I'm saying is normally the bad guys are just fighting against each other and
right.
everything, but you know, to say the Charmings are banding together in this, it's not true. And I think the writers wrote that in, that instead of them being a strong unit, there is going to be this friction. Well, and so
yeah, there is. What I'm saying though is I think that, you know, I think the villains have a totally different goal now.
Right. Right.
And that's the key, is that the villains, they were, you know, single-minded before. Well, now that kind of circumstances have changed and their interests are now aligning with the Charmings, they know how to focus better than the Charmings do.
Well, it's interesting that the boat hole scenario, that whole brawl, not brawl moment, was really kind of a glimpse into their life. There for a long time, they were fighting against each other.
Right.
But now Henry is in peril
right.
on this island. They are going to work together.
Right.
And
right.
stop this war, stop this
right.
storm, right?
Mm-hmm.
Quote unquote, and go get Henry.
Well, so. And let me just say this, because I don't want any Charmings fans to get mad at me for this. But what I mean by the fact that Charmings aren't as focused as the villains, they have a broader scope. And so they've got multiple things that they are concerned with, because it all is about their love for their children and now their grandchild. They're focused on the fact that they found each other. So that's, you know, one goal that's been accomplished. Now second goal was they found Emma. But see, now they're trying to be parents, and yet they're trying to help Henry, but they're trying to comfort Emma because they know she's upset. So I think that's kind of where, like I said, the villains don't have a lot to lose. These guys do.
Well, the key to this is, Snow and Charming's belief and hope. Everybody kind of poo-poos, including Emma now, that. But that's going to come into play later
on.
And so, no
question.
So they are actually in the right, even
right.
though that no one, you know, unicorn stickers and blah, blah, blah,
no,
and all these little
rainbow
things.
Rainbow kisses and unicorn stickers.
Right. and all this making fun of her
right.
and him, in a way,
mm-hmm.
are going to pay off in the end.
Oh, I
so, think so,
too.
So hold on. It's
definitely,
you know,
definitely.
So, okay, really quick. We got to kind of roll through these because we got a lot of stuff going on. Bay's sword. I think it's going to play in some kind of magical thing. In the preview for next week, we see a sword and a stone.
Mm-hmm.
So I think sword lore, of which I'm really excited about, because
mm-hmm.
I did a lot of studying on different types of swords.
Mm-hmm.
Dwarfs making swords and all this kind of thing. I love that kind of stuff. And I hope that we really get into that kind of thing, because we really haven't seen magical swords. And so that's what I was thinking. We see a magical stick that opens up doors and reveals things. Maybe the sword would do something.
I remember Mulan's sword had something going on with it too.
Yeah.
But and different.
There was a magical sword that Snow had. Remember when they were fighting Korra? Mulan's sword.
That's what I'm saying.
She gave it to her.
Right.
And
that's
said,
what I'm saying.
This deflects magic or something
right.
like that.
Right.
So we've seen a little bit of that, but I want to see more. That's just my thing.
I know. You like swords a lot.
I do.
And especially, you know, of many
magical
different
things.
Different
yes.
varieties.
Right. So, you know, Hook, and we love Hook.
Yep.
Hook. Talked about keeping Bay and being around Bay for a while. So remember, Neil taught. There's a couple of sword teaching scenes.
Well, Charming taught Henry,
and Neil. I thought.
I don't recall him doing that, but
okay.
that doesn't mean that it didn't happen.
Okay, so I retract that. But anyway, for sure, Hook, I believe, taught Bay how to fight. And that's why the sword meant a little more than just it represented Bay.
It's possible, too, that Rumpel also gave him the ability. I mean, he could have easily, you know, gifted him with that magically, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Or taught him himself, having been on the front lines himself.
So, Pixie Dust, when you bring that up, the first thing I think of is Team 7 and their gift to dig in the mines
right.
and find the diamonds and other jewels that make pixie dust.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Also Mother Superior.
Right.
And her magicness, and possibly connected to Tink and all that kind of thing.
Right.
So,
right. So yeah. Now here's the question that I have, and I'm going to pull this out, and this is just going to be just because I'm very curious. And if Rul Gorum,
right,
Blue Fairy,
mm-hmm,
is the most powerful being ever in the universe, why in the world wouldn't they want to take her with them?
That's a good point.
And has she gotten her magic back? I mean, we know she kind of apparently figured out how to give memories back.
Right.
But what else? And again, why isn't she on the front lines fighting with them? I mean, look, let's be honest. We know why she's not, but because I don't think Keegan's available right now, and that may be why. But again, I would think that they'd want to try and pull that in there. That's just my thinking. Because seriously, if you know you're going somewhere, and you know you're going somewhere where there's something that everyone should fear. I mean, even Rumpel said we should all be, mm-hmm, afraid of him.
Right.
I would seriously want as much firepower as you can get. And if Rul Gorum is supposed to be the most powerful, I'd kind of want her on my side. That's just me.
True.
And where are all the other fairies?
That's a good point, too. Don't know.
That's just going to be an interesting poll. Hopefully, we'll see more of a Blue Fairy later.
Yep. Love her, too. So, in my mind, I think of samurai movies a lot, and my Star Wars and Joseph Campbell and all my different thinkings of things. I think the mermaids were the first line of defense to the Neverland Island. And I think that, mm-hmm, their little trick of you're going to kill each other, and then kind of causing a situation where people have to make a decision to fight each other or to not fight each other. And if they pass that game or test, and I stress the word game,
mm-hmm,
or test, then they got through that level and then they move on further. But most probably didn't. I would have been interested, mm-hmm, to see a lot of destroyed ships,
well,
or empty ships.
Right. And here's the thing. If you think about it, the power of suggestion, mm-hmm, is very, very compelling.
Yep.
So all she did was blow on her conch shell.
Right.
Right? And that's been a communicator of sorts for a very long time. You know, you go back in the history of Hawaii, and they blow on conch shells all the time for various reasons. So, but the act of her blowing on that didn't do much of anything.
Yep.
But the seeds of doubt, the whatever, were sown the minute she did,
mm-hmm,
in all their minds, because they're freaked out going, okay, we're in a land. And see, that's the funny thing. I think a lot of magic has to do with the power of believing. Even Henry's, mm-hmm, has proven it, that the more you believe, the more magical stuff you're going to see. So that's why I think that, you know, the whole, she didn't call the storm. They did.
Right, right.
And that's all that was. It was just a physical manifestation of the tension that, mm-hmm, was already brewing between them. And then it just kind of, it spilled out the minute she, you know, sowed that seed of doubt in their minds.
It was actually kind of like, we've seen movies like The Witches of Eastwick and, mm-hmm, different movies about witches or things where the more angry, and probably Star Wars in a way, the more angry they get, the more it physically changes things or something.
Right.
So it's kind of that kind of moment where, we've seen it before.
Yeah, we have.
So the Home Office. Now, after all the talk that Greg said, laid all this information out,
mm-hmm,
about blah, 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 and it's gone? That's kooky, man. I think the Home Office is still around. It has to be somewhere. I don't think it's done. If it is done, what a waste of exposition. My Lord, come on.
Here's
now
the reality, though. Think about it. Again, power of suggestion.
Right.
The Home Office. Home Office is typically refers to, I know for sure, refers to, you know, the British intelligence during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it's more than that, and I'm sure somebody will point that out, but I know for a fact that was how they referred to British intelligence and the military, central command of the military, British military, in World War II was referred to as the Home Office. And I'm sure, actually, we might have even referred to our own military as there might have been a Home Office here in the United States. I don't know for sure. I'm not versed in our military history. But my point is that the Home Office is, it sounds ominous, it sounds important, it sounds big, and really kind of all it kind of is, you know, just the command center.
Right.
So I wouldn't be surprised if there is nothing else to do with the Home Office, because the whole point is, especially, let me go here with this. Boys like to play games,
right,
and one of their favorite games to play is war.
Right.
So if you're going to play war and you're going to play serious hardcore war game, you need a home office.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the home office is just part of the game.
Yeah.
That's all I think it is. I don't think there's anything more to it. I think it was just a ploy. And again, it sounds important. It sounds official. And Greg still kind of having that child's mentality of trying to find his dad. That right, whole thing stemmed from his childhood.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just saying, I think that, you know, that's why he fell for whatever they sold him, because home office sounds important and official.
Yep.
Right?
That is true. All right.
Hi, Captain. Check this out. I love the bell, Captain. I just can't stop ringing it.
Stop ringing that bell. Stop. Thank you. Man.
Dude, really?
The quartermaster is just nuts. Shh. He's crazy.
He is.
But he loves ringing the bell.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So next thing. It was funny that Rumpel referred to Pan the way that most people referred to Rumpel.
Right.
Or gold, especially. Because mm-hmm. Regine always said that. There's always something more with you.
Right.
There's always... So it was just kind of funny.
Right.
And I forgot to mention this in the first thoughts, is the Wizard of Oz connection with the crystal ball.
Right.
And it's probably been done a lot of times. But
sure.
I just remember. And actually, Queen Regina used it as well. Because with the mirror.
Sure.
Because when she saw Snow White cavorting with those dwarves. And,
right.
So in a
well,
way.
And Rumpel's used it.
Yeah.
We've seen him use it, so it's very fitting that yeah. Bay would follow in his footsteps.
Yep. So the Wizard of Oz, the Wicked Witch, watching our heroes.
Right,
so,
right.
In a way, it was the same
right.
type of thing. So my big question is, will Emma rescue all the lost boys as she connects with them as orphans? I think mm-hmm. that's really going to come into play.
Right, right.
Is that... that she's going to come in there angry, wanting to rescue Henry. But as she learns and spends time with them and says, you're just like me,
right.
she's not going to let him off the hook. But I think in the end, I think she's going to not only rescue Henry, she may destroy Pan or may rescue Henry, Pan, and the rest of the Lost Boys.
Yeah.
Because she realizes... they just need someone to love them like she always wanted.
Right.
I don't know. But anyway.
Well, and here's the other thing. You and I talked about this a little bit. And I said, if she doesn't rescue Pan, I see Regina doing it as kind of a replacement Henry.
Hmm.
I mean, look, let me clarify that before people get unhappy with me on that, too. What I mean is Henry is... still loves Regina and sees her as his mom. He said so at the beginning. So I'm not saying that he doesn't think of her as his mother. And I'm not saying she doesn't love him as a son, because I know she does. What I am saying, though, is let's face facts. He can't very well split himself in half and half live with Regina, half live with, you know, Emma.
Right.
So if, in fact, the odds are that he's going to want to live with Emma, especially if they reconnect with Bay... because let's face facts, I foresee at some point in time, they will know that he's still alive and that he's in Enchanted Forest. Somehow, some way, it may not be right now. It may not be any time in the first half of the season. It may not be till the end of this season. he may end up getting to Neverland himself somehow, some way. So my point is that at the end game here, Emma and Neil will probably be together, and Henry will probably come to live with them. That's just, I mean, they're a family. That's the natural family, right? He will still want to spend time with Regina. He'll still want to see Regina. He'll still want to have a part of Regina. But I think he's going to end up being living with his, you know, his birth parents. So that being the case, Regina may save Pan herself and adopt him as her son so that she's got someone that will live with her all the time. You know what I mean? To fill that, that hole that I think Henry, you know, living with Emma may cause. And that's just, again, a prediction. I'm not, I don't want people getting upset with me over that, but I do want to make sure that people understand that, you know, I see her doing that as she always wanted a son. She always wanted somebody to love her. She wanted Owen when he ran away from her, she turned around and eventually got Henry. Right.
The writers knew it was going to be tenuous having a birth mother and an adopted mother in the same show. So, and I think that over time they're learning to work with each other.
Absolutely. I do see that Regina and Emma will actually, you know, share custody, so to speak, or at least Emma will have custody of him. Cause she flat out getting off that ship, she's like, you know, my son will get him back. It was just, she's very, very determined. And I think part of that is she's grieving over Neil. And so this is her only connection to Neil in her mind. This is her connection to Neil. So, or that little piece of Neil that she can always have with her. So I'm just saying, I think she'll let Regina have a very big part in his life. But at the same time, she's going to be like, yeah, he's still mine though.
Okay.
I'm just saying, I see that.
So Regina is his mother.
Absolutely.
But I think Emma has to work much more harder to claim that title.
Right.
And so that, I think, is, you know, why this is tough for her.
It's tough for all of them. Saying, I think that, you know, we've already seen Regina have those feelings. You know, you can see that she's very hurt when he chooses to go with Emma instead of her, or when he sees Emma and he wants to be with Emma. You know, she's hurt by that. And so that's what I'm saying. I think that she will look for another outlet for that, you know, mother's heart that she feels that she wants to have, you know, a son of her own, and maybe Pan will be it. I'm just saying, or maybe one of the Lost Boys. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think that if there is going to be any saving of the Lost Boys or Peter Pan or whatever, it may be Emma. And if it's not her, I see Regina doing it.
Well, I see everyone having an opportunity to redeem themselves. So
absolutely.
That definitely
no
falls
question.
In line with
no
that.
Question.
So quickly, we're just, it's just rolling so fast. It's already 42 minutes now. So our heroes, I think, are going to have to complete games.
Right.
To gain control of the island or control over Pan and or escape the island. I think that's what it's coming down to.
Right.
I see a lot of similarities to Indiana Jones movies. You may think I'm crazy, but I mean, I do. And so.
Yeah, there's probably some of that. But I think, honestly, it feels a lot like Survivor now.
Yeah.
It reminds me of Survivor. I think that you're going to have to compete, and you're going to either somehow advance to the next round or not. And we'll see what happens.
Okie dokie. So we're going to have this.
Hi, Captain. I see some email coming our way.
And some great email it is. We're going to talk about some of the points, and then I'm going to post the email in the show notes so you can read the complete ones. Mm-hmm. And the first is from Marcy. And she was saying that she was wondering, since there's a human Pan, why does the shadow get the kids and not the boy? And anyway, she mentioned that Wendy said you couldn't leave Neverland once you step foot on it, but maybe your shadow can.
Well, interestingly, because we know that Bay was there, and he did set foot on Neverland, and he managed to get off. Hook was there, and he managed to get off. So somehow there is a way Wendy may have been told that. Maybe Wendy assumed that. Maybe Peter Pan told her himself. Because remember, Peter Pan, if we go back to the actual story, and I'm not talking just the Disney movie, I'm talking the actual real story, is that Peter followed his shadow to from Neverland to London, right? So if he followed his shadow there, the shadow has escaped, but so has Pan. And he escaped because he had pixie dust. So maybe there really is only one way to get off, and that is pixie dust.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was a vial of pixie dust, obviously, and it looked like it was mostly empty, except for a little bit. Henry used that to get them off that cliff to prove that he had the heart of the truest believer. So maybe there's more pixie dust somewhere else. We'll see, I guess.
Yeah.
I think that the reason why the shadow would get the kids and not the actual boy is because maybe he can't leave right now because he didn't believe, and that's why he needed Henry's heart.
Well,
he couldn't make the magic work.
So some are saying that the heart is going to be used to break a curse on the island.
Maybe.
Or I was thinking, and I think Nat brought it up too, is that he doesn't have a heart. Pan does not.
Yeah.
And then that's why he wants a heart to believe,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, and we've seen other people that have no hearts and how their lives are.
Right.
So,
Look at Cora.
Right.
And maybe Cora took it, or maybe Rumpel took it, and that's the reason.
Okay. So, I think we've discussed Marcy's email.
Absolutely.
Let's touch a point, and I just typed it in the show notes about Rumpel's connection to Neverland,
yeah.
and his previous season one thing. I guess he forgot about it in season two and three. What did he used to do?
What do you mean, what did he used to do?
In season one.
He used to, that we talked about, yeah.
Right.
He was constantly looking for kids.
Right. Babies,
so,
kids.
Right. Especially, he wanted Cinderella's baby, mm-hmm. and he wanted Cinderella's baby beforehand. And again, why?
And we never really did get a good reason why he collected all those things.
Right.
Like, remember when Archie Geppetto brought things back to him.
Yeah. Oh, no, it was Archie.
Right.
It was Archie.
Right.
When he brought things back. Right. Jiminy. He brought things back.
And he had all these collections of things.
Right. He collects things. So what is he collecting and why?
Why? Right.
And that, I mean, the kid part, I honestly think that the reason he collects kids is because he did it for Pan at mm-hmm. some point in time.
Yep.
So maybe that answers the question that Marcy had is, why does the shadow get it? Because Rumpel's not there to do it for him.
Hmm. Good point. Thank you.
Just throwing that out there.
Yep. Thank you, Marcy, for that. Sorry about the little rabbit trail, but I wanted to throw that in. This is from Lori, and she was asking about the frozen in time section in Storybrooke. She's wondering, so did time really stand still and repeat itself over and over like Groundhog Day? And I believe it did.
Well, here's
it's like
the thing.
A skipping record.
But it seems kind of funny. I mean, maybe it did, and maybe they didn't even realize it until Emma got there. Because when Emma got there and the clock started again, but how did they know a lot of the stuff that they knew? You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, I guess maybe because Regina gave them all these memories of things, but how did Regina know any of this stuff? There's just so many questions about that. So it's really hard to tell because it looks like possibly, it was a Groundhog Day, the same day over and over and over.
Well, and I believe it was because we did see that in Welcome to Storybrooke. I mean, just one instance.
But how long did that last?
Marco, 28 years or what, however many years until Emma showed
but
up.
But it wasn't exactly the same day. It had slight differences.
Okay, but,
do you know what I mean?
Okay, perfect. But it's kind of like they could change clothes, but they were still doing basically the same thing.
They were.
Walking on the same street. Marco was trying to fix that sign over and over and over.
Right, right. They had similar experiences every day.
Yep.
Because, again, it was a different day when Owen and his dad showed up in town, right?
Yeah, right.
When they made their way down into the town,
mm-hmm.
that's when things kind of started changing a little bit.
Okay.
And you could see slight differences.
All right. So let's kind of, I'll slide this out on the table, that it was the same day.
Same routine,
except when someone new was introduced, that kind of interrupted what it was, and it changed it a bit, and you had to kind of make adjustments for that. Now, Henry must have went crazy because he was like, oh, I don't want to do the same school thing again. I don't want to learn this thing again.
Well, remember, he wasn't there for a long time.
Right, but I'm just saying, so okay, I think between the both of us, I think we've answered
right.
the question.
And I think
the
you're
same
right.
Same routine.
Right. So the first few days until Henry and Owen and his dad came down, and
right.
then it kind of shifted a little bit.
Yep.
And then when Henry showed up, that things shifted there as well. As Henry was growing up, that must have shifted things because Henry
right.
came from outside.
Yep.
And then the third was Emma when she came, and that's when everything, and the clock started up again. That's when time started moving again. So what's interesting is if you look at it, it's almost like, have you ever watched A Trail of Ants? They all follow each other very,
yep.
very, it's a
yep.
very routine, very pattern. They know where they're going, but you put something in the middle of that trail and all of a sudden they go, whoa, 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 whoa. And then you remove that thing again and then they kind of scramble for a minute and then they kind of get themselves back in line again.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what that reminds me of.
Yep. So we can't roundabout way, but I think we've answered your question, Lori.
Yeah, I would
believe
say.
So.
I
Thank
would say
you
so.
For that. And were there some sections in Holly's email that you wanted to highlight or?
Let's see.
I think the one thing that one of the things that she was really impressed with is that Rumpel left something behind for Bay. Almost
yeah.
like he knew that one day Bay would come and find that stick.
Well,
and so
he did, though, in a sense. He must have known that somehow Bay would know that because he, remember, he can see the future.
Yeah.
Can't
yep.
see all the details, but he can kind of see. The other thing that I thought was really interesting and she did point out was, you know, Tamara actually thinking that Rumpel would forgive her for what she did to his son. That was ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with her on that. Tamara, I'm glad she's gone, but she was incredibly stupid to actually think that he would, you know, forgive her. And was she really like actually like contrite at all? Or was she just literally begging for her life, which I'm pretty sure she was begging for her life. Cause remember she played the woe is me. I had no idea. Oh, blah, blah, blah character really well
mm-hmm.
and fooled them all. So I don't think she, you know, I don't feel sorry for her at all.
She also said the scenes between Henry and Pan were bone chilling. And that's
yeah.
true.
Yeah.
Because initially Pan was this kind of scared. They're coming. I want to help you. And Henry's like, come with me, go over here, go over there. And then the shift came, obviously, when he said, I'm Peter Pan. And then it was like Henry was going, oh, man.
Right.
Wow.
Well, and then he realized that, you know, there was, things were not going to be like the Disney movie. But what's interesting is that when I first saw Peter as this lost boy, quote unquote,
mm-hmm.
who was also being sought by Peter Pan, I'm thinking to myself, you know, okay, I didn't think he was Peter Pan. That was a little bit of a twist for me. What I did think, though, was that he was going to turn out to be one of the, you know, as much as Felix is the head of the guard, I figured this kid was going to be even higher up the food chain, you know, right up next to Pan, because he,
mm-hmm. right.
I figured he was going to turn around and you know, basically betray him.
Mm-hmm.
And hand him over to Pan. And then when he turned around and said, I am Peter Pan, I'm like, ooh, okay, I kind of didn't see that coming.
So Holly also mentioned that when the Lost Boys were circling around Henry and Pan, I was hoping that Rumpel would have shown up and did his best Molly Weasley improvisation of not my grandson. So
a little Harry Potter reference there.
Yep, yep. So,
yeah, and I agree with her, too. She said that, you know, Pan's games are going to be very cruel. And I think they really are. And again, it comes back to what a boys like to play. They play war.
Yeah.
You know, capture the flag. Even hide and go seek to a certain degree. I think we're going to see some pretty dastardly war games going on.
All right. And some kind words and give Lady a treat.
Mm-hmm.
And we will certainly do that. This is from Mai. And she had a couple of items to talk about And the one thing is she wanted to kind of remind us, you know, we mentioned that Hook kind of looked at Emma like his daughter, but actually there's a little romantic tension there. And she was just saying, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I go, okay, okay. So we definitely want to adjust what we said.
Exactly. I didn't mean specifically like his actual daughter. I think it was more of, again, he looked at Neil or Bay like a son. And knowing that Bay and Emma are together and have a child, on some level, he might have, you know, had a concern for her, like a adult would have for a teenager, you know, do you know what I mean?
Right.
Kind of a, like a, I don't want to say daughter, but I mean, yeah, I use the word daughter, but because if he looked at Bay as his son, then, you know, it stands to reason he would kind of think of her. But then there is a part of him that I think really cares about her and actually would like to be with her. And I don't know if he's falling in love with her, but he's, you know, he's definitely got a care and concern for her. But anyway.
Yep. And I think Hook is really not, you know, when we first were introduced to him, we were thinking, oh, is he going to be the big oaf with the, you know, big mustache and the hat and all that? And he's really turned out to be, you know, kind of the classic bad guy with the heart of gold, you know, pardon the pun,
right.
to gold. But it's just like he cares.
And
which is really interesting. He's angry at Rumpel and he wants to kill him, but he really doesn't, because I think deep down that's really not him.
I think he did want to kill him because he was hurting so much from when Mila died. What I do realize though is that when he sees that Rumpel now has a grandson and his son is back, and he thinks about how would he feel if, you know, the roles were reversed, so to speak.
Yeah.
Would he, you know, I think he cares enough to recognize that orphaning Bay and giving Henry no chance to be with his grandfather is not the way to go, because I think he's got a little more compassion.
And
again, Emma's involved. And I think that with that, you know, care and concern for Emma and the fact that I know he really cares about Bay. Because again, it's Mila's son.
Right.
So I'm just, that's all it all just kind of ties into.
Now let me clarify what I said. I know that Hook did try to kill him,
mm-hmm.
but he poisoned him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think possibly in the back of his mind, he was thinking, you know, he could survive this, but I'm going to give my rage this shot.
Right.
And so this will play out this rage. But once he recovered from that, which he probably knew he would, he knows he's the dark one.
Yeah, exactly.
And so now he's given him a second chance.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, in a hanging, if the rope breaks, all bets are off.
Right.
And you get to walk.
And the thing is, you know, the whole, okay, I have your life in my hands. I'm going to give you mercy. We're even now. I'm better than you, or I don't even want to say that because that's not.
But I think it
assuaged his guilt for having to do something he probably didn't want to do, but yet feeling the need to take revenge.
It was nice to see him actually care for Bay, and mm-hmm. I think that really impressed Emma.
Right.
Is that in a way, you know, I mean, you mentioned it, that Hook was kind of like a stepfather or a babysitter or something like that. You know, he could have killed Bay. He could have done all kind of different things.
Sure.
Now, letting him go to Neverland, that wasn't a fun little jaunt. But, I mean, he basically, Bay chose that. He said, you can stay. You can be part of our crew. I'll take care of you.
Yeah.
I said, Nope,
not after what you did to my family.
Right,
yeah.
So.
Now, in at the end here of Mai's email, she makes a good point, is that Bay did go to our world when he fell in the portal, and he ended up with the Darlings, and then sacrificed himself for Wendy's brothers, and that's how he ended up in Neverland.
Yep.
Because he ended up in England first when he first fell through the portal. So again, what was he thinking about to get there, or how did he get to England specifically? Did Rumpel direct it, or who knows how that happened? Because, you know, think of a place and that's where you go. So, but she's right, is that he did end up at the Darlings first, and then he ended up, because when Peter came, or the Shadow came to take the brothers, he sacrificed himself and went with the Shadow.
Yep. All right. And my liked the little quote, and I did too, you know, when Hook said, I'm quite fancy from time to time when you're not yelling at me.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
And he, again, I mean, that's, I think that,
he
you know.
Come out, he cannot come out and say, I
like,
you.
Yeah.
He can't say that. It's just not him. So.
It's not his, yeah. It doesn't seem to be his nature, and it doesn't seem to be his way of speaking, but anyway.
His, yeah. So, anyway. Like I said, we're just going to bring out little points here and there, and we'll post the full email in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Brad sends his things I learned from Heart of the Truest Believer is that sand is not an effective replacement for batteries. I agree. And Snow and Charming are infuriatingly optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
And sharks and whales and krakens, oh my, have nothing on mermaids,
yep.
And that's true. And
Mulan and Aurora are much more likable than in the first season.
Yes, yes, but Mulan
second
always
season, actually,
yeah, but Mulan actually she always is leery of new people. You know, she thought that Emma and Snow brought the Wraith. And if you watch that scene again with her and Neil, of which I thought, it just sounds weird. It reminded me of Kung Fu. A guy in a suit kind of walking over the sand dunes.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's,
yeah.
It's my old age is showing. But Mulan had about a million questions for him.
Oh, yeah.
Well, where'd you come from? How'd you know? Da, 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 da. You know. I love the comment about the Mulan movie. That was just fun.
Yeah,
what's a movie?
So. That was our second date, going to see the original
That's
Mulan
right.
in the theater.
And I remember drawing a mm-hmm. kind of a royal scroll
Invitation.
Inviting you to
yeah.
the movie, and
it
I put it up in your
visor.
Yeah,
yeah, I have that tucked away somewhere. Yeah. Anyway, I love
some
this.
People are throwing up now, and some
I
people are
saying,
"Oh,
yeah."
Okay.
It doesn't take much for Aurora to give up. That is true. That's very true. And we talked about that a little bit. It's like, come on, dude. Go back to sleep again.
It reminded me a little of Poltergeist.
Oh,
in that
mm-hmm.
going into this kind of weird state and you see the scary thing.
Mm-hmm,
anyway,
mm-hmm,
for what
mm-hmm,
it's worth.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and in the end, Brad mentions their incredible music from Mark Isham. And
I thought
that
so
is
too.
True.
I was like,
really
wow,
some
really
different
some
stuff.
Different stuff for season three. I was really excited about that.
Yep.
It was really cool. I remember thinking that watching it going, ooh, I like this. Can't wait to get the soundtrack. That'll be fun.
Yes, yes. And so let's do this.
Aye, Captain. I think we may have some voicemails coming our way.
Ta-da!
Wow. Well, that was pretty good. The quartermaster has a band there.
He must have taught
a glockenspiel.
Yeah, he must have taught some of the other pirates how
That's
to
incredible.
Do that. He's pretty. He can be a little, but he's pretty clever.
Okay, our first voicemail here.
Hey, Jeff and Colleen, it's Tyler. So glad that this show is back. I just had a question about whether I'm remembering something wrong or whether the writers decided to change something. I'm actually watching the 20 minutes of Once Upon a Time in Wonderland that they've already posted online. Wasn't Sidney Glass the genie from Agrabah? Are we supposed to take it that Sidney Glass was not Aladdin's genie, as in the Robin Williams character in the Disney movie? Or, like, which, I'm confused as to which one is which. Or are we going to find out that neither of these genies we've been introduced to now are, in fact, that character, and that character is yet another genie? I'm just a little confused on this. Do you guys have any insight into this that I'm missing? Other than that, loved the season 3 premiere, thought it was great, and I really loved the fact that, Samara and, what's his name, can't even think of his name right now, died super early in the episode. I was like, oh, sweet, well, that's what it you know, it's why you ask questions of your bosses. You don't just do as they say. Okay, talk to you all later. Bye.
All right, so what do you think?
Excuse me. I have no idea, honestly. I was given that impression that he was a genie from Agrabah.
Because of the Agrabah vipers.
Right, exactly. So that's the only reason why I'm thinking.
And he did mention
Agrabah. So
yeah.
I don't know if he's Aladdin's genie. He might be. I'm not sure if he's because he thinks he's seeing another genie somewhere else.
Yeah, in Wonderland.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
In a bottle.
We don't know how many. Maybe that was supposed to be him younger.
Okay.
No, seriously.
Okay.
Think about it.
Yeah. I think it's two different. But no. You have a point. No. Tyler has a point too. It just all kind of came together because we do have Jafar,
right,
in Wonderland,
right?
So maybe. I don't know.
And Cyrus is supposed to
be
from...
Maybe it's kind of like Darren in Bewitched. There's two different actors playing the same role.
Well,
I don't know.
Brad made a point about the fact that Robin Hood had a nice facelift since face transplant since we last saw him. And that we knew that. We knew that they recast Robin Hood. So
right,
that we already knew that. But that's my point. I'm just saying, what if the story is that the same... You know, who is he?
Hold on. Which genie's the better singer? That's going to be the one that I'll choose. So what? We got to have a musical episode.
Oh my goodness, that was very random. But anyway, it just seemed random. I'm just saying, what if it's his son? What if it's his brother? What if it's his nephew? It may be two separate ones. I don't know. I don't know how they're going to reconcile that. Because, again, we know why they don't have Giancarlo Esposito.
Yeah.
Well, Giancarlo Esposito is on another show. So, unfortunately, they can't replace Sidney Glass. I mean, they can't bring Sidney Glass back. So, it needs to be another genie. But is it the same genie, just younger?
I don't know. All right. We're going over. I was going to try and get this done in an hour, and this is just not...
Just keep going. Even if it's a little bit over an hour, it's all right.
Okay.
There's a lot to talk about, so keep going.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, there is.
Keep going.
All right.
Keep going.
Good day, Captain Jeff and First Mate Colleen. This is Brad calling in for Season 3. We're finally here. Over the summer break, I introduced my wife to Once Upon a Time, and I loved watching it with her just so I could see her reaction. She would try and get me to answer all her questions, but I never broke. I would simply tell her, "You'll just have to wait and see, Derry." Now, Sunday was the first time we watched a brand new episode together, so it was awesome to share something new that we hadn't both seen before. Now, the theme of this episode was all about believing, and it begged the question, what kind of believer are you? We all believe in something, but we don't all believe it in the same way. Some of us are like Henry, where belief comes natural, and something as simple as a book was all he needed. Some of us are like Emma, where we need to see in order to believe, and someone has to continually guide us along the way. And then some of us are like Greg and Tamara, and we believe without question, which in my opinion is the most dangerous of them all, because although you may feel passionate about something, it may make them lie, hurt, kidnap, and even kill for their cause. So whether you believe in religion, politics, a dream, or even a happy ending, the way you believe it will affect the outcome. And this is a great message to show as portraying. Something else that caught my attention this week was just how evil the whole island felt. Between the mermaids, the lost boys, the shadow, and Peter Pan, all acting totally opposite from what we've seen and read, make me believe this island is under some kind of curse. Now, if this is true, you can make Peter Pan and the island as evil as you wanted, because this is not who they really are. Then we have the doll that Felix throws at Rumpelstiltskin's feet. At first I thought it might be Baze, but Felix says, "Isn't it funny, the things we haven't thought about in years still have the ability to make us cry." The word years makes me believe this doll belongs to someone else. The first thought I had was that the doll belonged to Peter, and that maybe he and Rumpelstiltskin used to be brothers. Continuing the thought that Peter is under a curse, seeing the doll again would make Rumpelstiltskin remember how his brother used to be. A second thought I had was, what if Rumpelstiltskin had a sister who disappeared, and the doll belonged to her? And what if that sister's name was Tinkerbell? Now, we've heard that she has a surprising connection to someone we know, and I wonder if this could be it. Well, that's it for my thoughts this week, so I'll just end with this.
Well, hearties, thanks for letting me come aboard your vessel. Hopes my phone call didn't make you hang your jib, but if it did, I'll probably soon be walking the plank. But until that time, I ain't no bilge rat. So if it please the captain, I'm asking if my mates and me can stay aboard the whole season. In the meantime, I'll be here swabbing the deck. Arrgh! Where's me grog?
That's awesome.
That's funny. You should mention that. We may get to the grub part later.
So. We might indeed.
Great voicemail.
And yes, you're welcome to stay aboard all season. And yeah, you want to swab the deck? Less work for me. I love it.
Maybe we'll get somebody to swip it later.
Oh.
I don't know. We'll see.
Might get a little Spaniard to come swip it for
us? Possibly.
Ooh.
There's okay. always room for one more. Swipper. All right.
Sweet.
So, very, very good mm-hmm. points about mm-hmm. Different kinds of belief, and very interesting tying in Tink with that doll.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Smee said lost ones, Henry said lost boys. There's an episode coming up tomorrow, Lost Girl. Mm. So, anyhow.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see, yeah. And again, if that's the episode for tomorrow night, then and Lost Girl is probably a reference to Emma,
yeah,
who was orphaned.
Right.
And if that's the case, we're going to see, like you talked about earlier, potential for her to connect with these boys because she herself is an orphan.
Yeah.
So anyway, no, I thought that was a really interesting point. You know, could it be, we'd talked about this before, you know, is that possibly Rumpel, is that he and Peter were brothers, you know, and that was, anything's possible. Anything is very possible at this point. So I think we're going to have to kind of see where they go with the season to kind of go with that. I still kind of think that the doll might be Bay's. Because Bay was there, and Bay, it looks very, you know, it's very rudimentary, little doll, like what he would have played with as a child in the Enchanted Forest, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. And
maybe Moraine is the one who made that for him, or mm-hmm. maybe his mom made it for him, and that's why he looks at it and started crying because maybe Mila did make that for him, and it is Bay's, and it ended up somehow there with him. Who knows? I think I'm sure we're going to find out what happened that made Rumpel cry over that doll. I'm sure of it.
Yep.
Don't know when, but mm-hmm. sometime this season we'll find out. But I do like the fact of, you know, could it possibly be a sister, mm-hmm. Belle, and you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Well, another thing, too, is he kind of alluded to maybe the doll kind of gave him a glimpse to the past or something
right.
that maybe he forgot
right.
or whatever. So, I mean, yeah. obviously looking at something you can remember, but maybe touching it like a matchbook cover or book of matches or something else. So, anyway, very interesting.
Right. I do agree with him that there's a potential for the island being cursed. Like we talked about a little mm-hmm. earlier that, you know, maybe the heart will break that curse. Henry's heart will break it. Who knows? But I think it'll be interesting to see. And if it is cursed, who cursed it?
Right.
I don't think it was Regina.
No.
I don't think it was Cora.
No.
So who cursed it? We'll have to see. It'll be interesting.
So here is surprise number one.
Hello, Oncers. It's the sometime bashful one, but always lovable badass, Mig Macario. I just wanted to leave a message and thank y'all for having or helping create a really successful season 3 premiere. We hit over 10 million. For those of you who didn't know, that's the live plus 3. Ratings. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And let's continue the magic because it's a Team 7 episode this Sunday. We really hope you enjoy it. Yeah, that's all I wanted to say. It's been a long time and I just wanted to say hi. Just so it's all fair, I'm not going to do too many shout outs because there's so many of you great friends out there and I wanted to keep it all equal and balanced, but know that I love you all. Oncers, Magnatics, Bashful Babes, Evil Regals, Little Red, Snowings, Charm Attacks. My God, okay, I said I wasn't going to give too many specific shout-outs. So let's keep going, and let's have a great episode this Sunday. I miss you all, I love you all, and we'll talk soon. Enjoy!
Ah, we love Meg.
Thanks, Meg.
Thank you so much. Ah,
that's awesome.
What a great way to get the main show for the first premiere episode going. Thank you again so much.
Yeah.
And
we're excited for Team 7, of course.
Oh yeah.
This is gonna be great.
And I can't say anything, but I think we may be seeing them.
Well, he already said.
Yes.
We will be seeing them.
Yes.
So I'm very excited.
So Bashful himself.
I've missed the
confirmed.
Boys. I missed the boys.
I know. So we need to kind of get everybody back together. You know, it's been a long summer. A lot of folks doing all kind of things. You know, we had Breaking Bad last weekend, but there's no more Breaking Bad. So, you know we have 10 more weeks of episodes. No break.
That's fantastic.
So
10 straight weeks. Dude.
So anyway, that's just great.
Yep.
Thank you. And we will continue on with this.
Captain, is it time for our comedy bit?
You know, this boat is musical.
Very.
There's musical parts in all this boat. Even Lady wants to get involved. She's over there whining.
She's crying at Mama.
I think she was thanking Meg in her own little dog's voice.
She did. She totally said thank you,
she
Meg.
She said, thank you, Meg. Yep. Please call back again sometime. All right. So here is here's the comedy bit. And we may want to shut that off because we have this fan going.
What? Shut what off?
The mics for while we play. Oh. Here we go.
Ahoy, mates. This is still Quartermaster Juan IV. We need to get our ship ready to sail to see all our friends on Once Upon a Time.
Like Emma?
Yes.
And Captain Hook?
Yes.
And Captain...
Yes.
Kirk?
All right.
What about Captain America?
That's enough.
What about Captain Crunch?
How would you like to try to sweet-talk your way away from a vicious shark?
Oh, you've met my wife?
Enough of the frivolity, lads. I'd like to introduce you to an important member of our crew. That's right. Our cook. His name is Saul.
What's his last name?
It's Manila. But that's not the point, lads. Let's welcome Cook Saul. All right. That's enough. I'm Cook Saul Manila. And before we get started here, I have a few things we need to get straight. There's not a suggestion box on this ship, so I don't want to hear your gums flapping about the food. I will serve it, and you will like it. Got it? All right. When I serve Grizzle Stew, you will not ask for seconds, no matter how good it is. And I mean that toothache, Larry. Now, we've run out of limes again, so some of you might get scurvy. And one more thing. This is serious. If I see this happen one more time, it's to the plank for you. The plank.
Excuse me, Cook Sal, but what are we never supposed to do?
No elbows on the table. And I mean a toothache, Larry. Thank you, Sal. His warm personality is nothing next to his warm grizzle stew. A few more things our attorneys want us to mention. You won't be sleeping much after a 22-hour, 7-day-a-week work schedule. And if you can sleep with the ship rocking back and forth in stormy seas, and I snore like a buzzsaw, and Stinky Joe has real bad gas. Oh. So, keep all that in mind. And now, lads, on to Neverland. And here's some nose clips for, you know, Stinky Joe.
Could he sleep on the deck?
Yeah, but it kills the fish.
Okay. That's the comedy bit.
That was awesome. I love it.
All righty. So one thing really fast is from the beginning, we've always tried to spread big love. And the one thing I did want to mention is that let's try and be a good pirate. And I know it sounds silly, but let's do something nice, like pay for somebody's coffee or pay for somebody's meal if you're going to McDonald's or something. Let somebody in front of you in the store line. Let's do something nice.
Yeah.
So I think those are the, and see, lady agrees.
Really wants you.
She agrees. And so let's do that. It's not about you. It's about the other person. And so see, lady's really on fire for this.
She really is.
And so we don't really need to know, but it's just, I wanted to mention that.
Yep.
Just be good. Reach out. And help somebody. Ladies, really, she's on board. All right. So I want to send big love out to everyone, including Lady. And have a great day. And we're going to be back with First Thoughts tomorrow after the episode. And thank you so much for listening. And if you have not given a review on iTunes, please do. 5 stars are good, and they help us get seen by other people.
They're definitely better than 4 stars.
Yeah, or one. And Lady would do a 5-star if she could. So that's it for today. Thank you
she
very.
She gets 5 paws up.
All right, and here we go. We'll see you guys tomorrow for First Thoughts.
Well, mates, thank ye for joining us for the Once Upon a Time Fan Podcast. This be a Roni's Own Media production. We want to hear from ye. Our website be onceuponatimepodcast.com. Our email be feedback@onceuponatimepodcast.com. Our voicemail line be 657-333-0626. So tell other oncers that this be the place to be. Until we sail again, big love to you all, and we'll see ye later. With me, good eye, of course.